荣誉特训院教授，也是以前芝加哥大学助理教授这个杜丹奇教授来到我们这个复旦大学历史系做一个演讲啊。今天晚上这个演讲的题目叫这个世俗主义在中国的历史根源啊。那杜丹奇教授大家都已经非常的这个知名了，所以都不用基本上不用什么介绍，但是也有一个新的变化，就是原来他由芝加哥大学这个最近在前两年转到新加坡国立大学去做那个人文社会科学这个研究院的这个这个主任。那么现在这个杜教授呢，现在是在这个学院在推动一些新的一些关于这个整个亚洲研究的新的范式的一些形成。那么另外他最近也在有一些新的著作是最要正在写啊，所以我们就是说可能可以期待，就是那么今天晚上的演讲是跟他最近要写的那本书有一个密切的关系啊，所以希望大家能够从中获得这个非常大的启发啊。我们邀请 OK 先开始
Thank you，
请大家欢迎啊。
好，
Maybe we can share it because we should, because I think you don't have to be very close anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Some distance.
Oh, yeah.
But let's just share it. Yeah.
Sure.
I think it'll be fun that way. You keep it and then, because I think, yeah.In any case, they want to hear me. 大家谢谢你们来。But I'm not going to speak in Chinese. I'm just going to, 因为我的中文不太流利，也不完全不流利，可以说啊。So I'm very sorry about this, but I'm very pleased to be in Fudan University. I was here almost 20 years ago.Long before these great professors became great professors, or were even, they may not even have been students at that time, I'm not sure. So it's a very happy for me to come back and give my presentation on some of my recent work.
我简单的翻译一下，很高兴我这次能到复旦来做演讲。我上次来是20多年以前了，那这时间是如此久远，现在我们身边的这些伟大的教授当时可能连学生都不是，所以我很高兴回来呢跟大家见面。
OK, let's hope this works. OK, So the title of my talk is Historical Roots and Character ofSecularism in China. China has largely escaped the conflicts based on faith-based communal religiosities characteristic of Abrahamic and other religions through most of its history. Thus, it has been relatively immune to politicization of faith-based communities, which has confounded the problem of religion and politics in so many parts of the world.However, it has not escaped a different type of conflict over religion, one that is vertical rather than lateral, between state and elite versus popular religiosities. I want to explore the roots and implications of this division for our understanding of Chinese state and society in an exercise in comparative historical sociology.
我这次讲演的题目是呢，中国世俗主义的历史根源和特征。中国呢，基本上是逃脱了这个由信仰为基础的这些社群的就是宗教信仰为基础的这群社群信仰特征的造成的矛盾啊、而这些矛盾呢，它是在就是历史上的像亚伯拉罕系的这宗教，比方说伊斯兰教也好，犹太教也好，基督教也好。他们的这些都是充满了这样的斗争的，所以呢他这个中国的这些这个基本上是免于了以宗教信仰为基础的这些社群之间的那种就是政治化而这一种政治化呢在世界的其他地方呢都复杂化了宗教和政治的问题 然而但他并没有逃脱一种不同的有关宗教的这种斗争，这种宗教的斗争呢，它是垂直或者说就是上下之间的关系，而不是一个平行的但多边之间的关系，它是国家政权和这个精英之间的关系，他们同这个人民大众的这些信仰特征之间的一个比较垂直的关系。我希望呢能够去探索一下这种分源的这个根源和他们的一些含义，对我们理解这个中国的政治国家和社会有什么样的这个根源和这个含义。我的方法呢将是比较的历史社会学。
Note this comment from the 4th century BC text Guo Yu, quoting a minister explicating cosmology to the king of Chu. Anciently, men and spirits did not mingle. There were special men and women called Shi and Wu, who supervised the position of the spirits at the ceremonies, sacrificed to them, and otherwise handled religious matters. But later, men and spirits became intermingled with each household indiscriminately performing for itself the religious observances which had hitherto been conducted by the shamans. As a consequence, men lost their reverence for the spirit, and the spirits violated the rules of the men, and natural calamities arose. Hence the successors of Shao Hao, Quan Shu, charged Chong, governor of the south, to handle the affairs of the heaven in order to determine the proper places of the spirits, and Li, governor of fire, to handle the affairs of the earth in order to determine the proper places for men. As such, and such is what is meant by cutting the communication between heaven and earth.
这个其实呢是一个很长的引用了这个国语当中楚语下的这么一部分，就是昭王问于关涉父。他其实中间他提到的这些话呢，我简单的就摘录一下。古者明神不杂，明之精爽不邪二，而又能其素中正，其智能上下比翼，等等等等。然后是在男曰喜，在女曰恶，是使至神之处位次处，而为之生气之福，而使先圣之后之有光烈，而能知山川之浩，宗庙之势，又是等等等等。然后呢，其实他就是说，于是乎有天地神明类物之官，是为五官，各司其序不相乱也。明是以能有忠信，神是以能有明德，明神意业静而不独，故神将之家生，民以物享，祸灾不至，求用不愧。然后一个转折就是吉少昊之衰也，久离乱德，明神杂糅，不可方物，福人作享，家为污始，无有药治，民愧于四而不知其福，争享无度，民神同位，民独其盟，无有言威，神家民则不捐其为，家生不降，无物以享，祸灾见真，莫尽其气，专需受之，乃命南天重司天以属神，命火正离司地以属民，使父旧常无相亲毒，是谓绝地天通。
Professor K.C. Chang notes that this myth is the most important reference to shamanism and its central role in ancient Chinese politics. He argues that the king himself was the most important shaman, and he and his priests sought to monopolize access to the sacred authority of heaven. In other words, the emperor, aided by his ritual specialists, not only claimed monopoly of communication with sacred power with regard to other clergy or church, but also with regard to the people. This modality of historical authority was very different from the other so-called Axial Age civilizations. Shall I read some more? Axial Age civilizations is a concept pioneered by Karl Jaspers, who built on Max Weber and was developed subsequently by S.N. Eisenstadt. It has recently become important once again in historical sociology. The period covers 1,000 years from 600 BC and concerns revolutionary developments in society, philosophy, and religion across the geographical axis of China, India, Middle East, and Greece. Thinkers and elite intellectuals sought the quest for human meaning beyond this world and beyond magic.
张光直教授，应该是张光直教授吧。他说呢，这一个神话其实是最重要的，提到沙满教，对于在他中国这个，萨满教在中国这个早期中国的这个， 政治当中的一个非常中心的地位。他的提出的观点是，这个国王本身就是最重要的萨满，他和他的这个祭司们，企图来这个独占通往神圣的这个天的权威的这么一个通路。也就是说呢，皇帝呢由他的这些祭祀的专家帮着，不仅仅呢要主张宣称拥有对于这个神圣力量的这个沟通的专有权，同时呢，他也是在就是跟自己的这个人民之间的这个沟通方面呢，也是有一个这个神圣的专有权。这种历史权威的模态呢，和这个所谓的轴心时代的文明，有非常大的区别。所谓轴心时代的文明是一个卡尔雅斯贝尔斯首先提出的一个概念，他呢其实又是建立在马克思韦伯的一个观点上，他呢后来又被这个艾森施塔特继续的发扬了。这个在历史社会学中呢又一次变得非常重要。这一时期呢大概涵盖了一个从公元前600年这个到后面的1000年这么一个时期，包括这个社会、哲学和宗教，发生在这个中国、印度、中东和希腊这个地理轴心的一系列的这种社会、哲学和宗教之间的这个革命性的发展，思想家和这个知识人的精英呢，他们寻求就是在这个世界此事和这个就是此事的这个之外，以及方式魔方这个方术魔术之外呢，来寻求一种就是人类的这个意义。
Okay, key to axial civilization is the split between the transcendent and mundane. The telos or goals of these civilizations were embedded in a divine transcendent realm. Thus, while the realm was discontinuous with the human world and no humans, including the state, could fully realize its goals or will in this world, humans were expected to aspire towards their realization. Axial civilizations represent a new type of reflexivity that gave expression to a vision of the world that could be different from the here and now. As the vision became institutionalized, the transcendent realm became a new ontological basis for universal ethics in these religions. This included better ways of organizing society and demands for self-sacrifice. But they developed a deep tension between transcendence and human efforts to realize it. For example, the city on the hill in Christianity. According to Weber, Chinese religion was not transcendent but immanent. We cannot fully agree with this proposition. In the Chinese religions, heaven represented a transcendent power and principle. But this power, moral authority and ideals did not have the same range of consequences as they did in the Abrahamic traditions.
对于这个轴心文明最核心的就是它对于这个超验和尘世的俗世的这么一种分裂。这些文明的目的，希腊文的这个 telos， 是嵌在一种神圣的超验的领域当中的。因此呢，当这个领域在人类世界变得不连续，然后没有人，包括国家政权在内，没有城市中的人可以完全实现他的目标，或者在这个世界中人类呢可能被期待去期望着朝向他们的实现的时候呢，就是这样一种情况了。这些轴心的文明它代表了一种新的自反性，就是自我反思性。这种自反性呢，它给予了一个世界的愿景的表达，它呢对于此时此刻呢来讲是非常的不同的。这种愿景呢，它一旦体制化了之后呢，这个超验的领域就成为了一个新的，就是宇宙伦理，就是普世伦理，这些宗教的普世伦理的一个新的本体论的这个基础。这就包括了这个更好的组织社会以及自我牺牲的这么一些要求，就和组织社会的方法。但是这个呢又在这个超验和人类实现超验的这个努力当中又生发出了一种更深的这个张力、紧张力。比方说基督教常说的山上的城市高高在上，又这个马克思韦伯他有这个说法，中国的宗教呢并不是超验的，而是内在的。我们不能够完全同意这一个陈述，因为在中国的宗教信仰当中，各种各样的宗教信仰当中，复述天它代表的是一种超验的力量和原则，但是这种力量、道德权威以及它的这个理念，它并不是具有相同的这种后果同这个所谓的亚伯拉罕系的宗教伊斯兰教、犹太教和基督教等等，他们这个后果是完全不同的。
XLH has been criticized for a variety of reasons, but two of them strike me as the most valid. First, it is too long to be usefully defined as a period, since people have used it to span the 6th century BC right up to the 18th century Enlightenment. As such, the Axial Age is a misnomer and is best thought of as a conceptual moment in the Hegelian sense, referring to the emergence and perhaps even decline in some cases of transcendental thought across many cultures. Historical preconditions include the transition to the Bronze Age and the rise of post-tribal states and empires, particularly across Eurasia. However, for want of a better word, I continue to use the expression as a mere name. A second criticism charges that transcendence is not necessarily religious. This is also an important qualification, since in non-modern societies, the distinction between religion and philosophy is frequently not made. Indeed, the argument is often made that Confucian thought is not religious, and I agree there are many trends within it that are not religious.
这个轴心文明这个术语呢，已经被因为很多原因而遭到了批评，但是两个原因在我看来是最有效的。第一呢，就是它作为一个时期来讲太长了，所以呢，人们用它有的时候用来就是指代从公元前六世纪。到甚至到十八世纪的启蒙运动，这个整个的一个时代都叫和轴心文明，所以它这么长，基本上就失去了这个用处。作为这样的一个轴心文明呢，它其实就是名不符实的，它仅仅是可能黑格尔这个语境下的这个叫做概念的时刻，它就提到了，它其实指的是这个出现。就是所谓的这个很多文明中出现了有一种超验的思想的，或者甚至是在某些文明的情况下是这种思想的一种衰落。历史的先决条件包括什么？包括从这个从朝向这个青铜时代的这个转移，以及这个后部落时期的国家和帝国的兴起，尤其是在欧亚大陆。然而呢，在没有更好的替代词的情况下呢，我想继续用这个来给它仅仅的是用来指代一个名称。第二个批评呢，它指控就是说超验并不一定是宗教的。那这是一个非常重要的一个等于说就是缓冲的这么一个说法，因为在非现代社会当中呢，宗教和哲学之间的这个区分并不是非常的明晰的，就是并不是经常都被做出来的。的确呢，这个论点经常有一个论点是经常被提到，就是说儒家的思想是并不是宗教性的而且我同意是这样的，就是说在这个儒家思想内部呢，有很多的这个趋向并不是宗教性的。
Nonetheless, historically, transcendence has often been most associated with the power or regime of sacrality. Even or perhaps especially in imperial China, the transcendent power of heaven could only be worshipped by the emperor, the son of heaven, and ordinary subjects could be executed for usurping this imperial prerogative. Access to heaven was, however, very desirable in the culture more broadly because heaven was also the source of a transhuman moral power which could be acquired through superordinary, if not superhuman, practices of cultivation. To be sure, in no society was religiosity dominated exclusively by conceptions of transcendence. In all axial societies, transcendent goals coexisted with personal and collective desires to attain what Charles Taylor has recently called human flourishing. That's the other moment by appealing to the sacred, the other Hegelian moment. But in each society, this coexistence had different configurations. It is this evolving configuration that we need to identify in Chinese history. A second related differential addresses the modes of access and approach to the transcendent. In the Abrahamic traditions, messianic prophecy, revelation, faith, and salvation characterize the approach to the transcendent. To be sure, faith and salvation introduced by Mahayana Buddhism after 3rd century CE were also important in Chinese history. They were perhaps most important in the 3rd century interregnum between powerful centralized states dominated by the Confucian literati, But throughout history, popular religious movements, drawing from Taoist and Buddhist ideas, advocated faith and salvation, frequently in apocalyptic terms. Below, I will elaborate on the redemptive societies of the 20th century. Yet, from an orthodox perspective, faith and salvation represented the minor key in Chinese history. Faith was often intertwined with the cultivation of techniques, the goals of which were tied less to salvation in the afterlife than to access to transcendent power in the present. In Chinese tradition, who was able to access the transcendent, through what means of cultivation, and with what this-worldly effects was the crucial problem.
尽管如此呢，从历史上来讲呢，超验呢，最经常是被一种就是神具有神圣性质的一个统治，一个政权，它的力量相连的，甚至是在就是中国的帝国时代，特别是在中国的帝国时代，这个天的超验的力量呢，只能由皇帝来这个祭祀。天子，就是皇帝的另外一个名称，而如果是普通的臣民，他会如果是去僭越的这个崇拜，或者说我们说叫淫祀的话呢，他很可能是被处决的。对于天的这个通路呢，在这个文化中，可能是更加广泛的被这个期望，因为天而且是一种超越这个人类的一个道德和一个身体的它的一种力量，它可以通过一种超常的如果不是超越人类的这么一种修养的技能来得到实现。当然呢，在没有一个社会当中，就是说如果这个是会有这个信仰模态会完全的被这个超验的这个概念所主导，在所有的轴心文明社会当中呢，超验的目标往往同个人以及集体的就是企及像查尔斯泰勒历史学家所说的那种人的繁荣，他的这个目标是共存的，他们也是会去向这个祈求像起灵于这个神圣的东西，这个其实是另外一个所谓的黑格尔的时刻，但是在每一个社会当中，这种共存都有不同的这个构造和模式，在这种每一个不断变换善变的这么一个构造模式当中呢，我们都应该正是在这种所谓的构造经常善变的构造模式呢，我们需要是在中国的历史当中要把它给指出来。第二个有相关的这种区分点呢，它其实对付的是这么一个问题，就是应对的是一个通路通向这个超验的通路和通向超验的这个方法的途径的这么一种模态。在这个阿波拉罕这个宗教群的传统当中，一般来说呢，通向这个超验的通路，往往是由弥赛亚式的这种就是先知预言，还有就是启示，还有就是虔信和救赎，他们只来标志着这种对通向这个超验的通路。的确呢，在虔信和这个虔信和救赎，大乘佛教在三世纪的这个之后的，也在中国历史上也起到了非常非常的重要的作用。他们很可能在这个，这个三个就是统一的中央政权，就是我们所说的两晋南北朝时期，三国两晋南北朝时期，它可能应该讲是更重要的。而这儒家的这个思想，它的文人士绅，它主导的可能是这个比较中央集权的国家。但是贯穿历史呢，这个群众的这个宗教运动，往往是他们会去从道家和佛家的这个思想中去吸取一些养分，并且提倡一种虔信和救赎。很可能呢，他们会用非常非常就是末世的预言的一种词汇。在下面呢，我将会继续的深入的阐述12世纪的一些这种救赎的秘密的社团。但是呢
，I also call them 救世。
救世
，yeah， to rescue the world。
rescue the world。Okay。
Yeah. Also, that's my term.
Okay. 但是从一个比较正统的这个角度来看呢，虔信和这个救赎，它代表的是中国历史当中的一个非常 非常不太重要的一个层面，就是 minor key 在西方音乐讲是小调，它意思是不太重要的一条主线。但是这个信仰往往都是同一种修行的这个技巧的修行相联系的，而技巧的修行的目标往往可能不是太同这个就是身后的这个救赎相关，而是通向现世的一种超验的力量啊，它更是同后者相关。在中国的诸多传统当中呢，谁能有那个有能力去通向这个超验的，通过怎么样的修行，或者是通过有什么样对此世的这个就是这个世界的影响呢，才是真正首要的一个问题。
So including 修身，
修身齐家，对对对。
In all axial civilizations, professional clerical groups emerge: church, priests, monks, ulama, as institutionally separate from the state to interpret transcendence and limited the latter's moral authority. They thus dominated a sphere autonomous from the state. Because of the divergence between the transcendent goals and its practical achievement, axial societies have a built-in motor or propensity to challenge the existing establishment of clerics and state and seek new meanings of personal and institutional change to achieve the transcendent goals. The periodic reform movements aimed against the established clerisy in both the Abrahamic and the Hindu-Buddhist traditions, such as Protestantism, Sufism, the Bhakti movements in India, evoked the transcendent in defying authority and sought to recreate a new order in this world to more truthfully represent the transcendent ideals. In the Hindu tradition, some of these movements also turned to otherworldly pursuits. But co-optation was and is an ever-present possibility.
Go on. 在这个轴心文明当中呢，专业的职业的这么一个教士群体出现了，他们是作为一种同国家政权分开的一个体制上是分立的，他们呢这个来阐释这个超验，并且呢限制后者就是世俗国家政权的道德权威。这些教士阶层包括就是教会的这个牧师啊、僧侣啊，还有乌拉玛这种，他们其实主导的是一个从国家政权独立的这么一个层面，因为这种超验目标和它的这个实际的实现的之间的分流呢，这些轴心社会，他们自身就有一种内在制动的这么一种引擎或者冲力，他们来挑战现有的这个教士阶层和国家政权的这个建制，他们呢寻求新的方法或者是个人或者是体制的变化呢，来达到这种超验的目标。就是周期性出现的这种改革或者改良运动，只在反对这个已经成为建制的这些教士阶层，在这个亚伯拉罕系的宗教当中，在印度教和佛教的传统当中，比方说我们的新教，还有苏菲派，还有那个印度教里面的这个真信派 Bhakti movements， 他们都是这些周期性的改良运动的代表，他们这些呢就争引了这个超验的东西来对抗这个权威，并且寻求在此事当中重建一个新的秩序而更加的这个更加真正的来代表一种这种超验的这个理念。在印度教的传统当中呢，有些这样的运动呢，而且还转向了鄙视的追求，但是呢这个过去还是现在来说呢，笼络就是这种建制的笼络呢，永远是一个无处不在的可能性。
Yeah. I also want to emphasize that this is separately that it is not intrinsically an oppositional movement. It is intrinsically an effort to get back to the original ideals. Okay, it is only under conditions of politicization or suppression that they become politicized.
Back to the basics, rather than against them. 就是我想强调一下呢，这些运动，我们所说的这些周期性的改良运动，它并不是内在自身就是反对建制的，它很可能仅仅是起先它的目标是回到这个基要，回到原来的本源的这个根基，但是因为在这个过程当中不可避免的就被政治化了，所以就站到了这个建制的对立面上去。
In the Abrahamic traditions, faith in a transcendental God is fundamental. It is dramatized by the willingness of Abraham to sacrifice his son for God. I argue that belief in these traditions represent a different order of commitment than belief in non-Abrahamic traditions, where belief often refers to belief in the efficacy of gods and activities. As such, belief, with a capital B, in Abrahamic tradition should perhaps be capitalized to differentiate it from efficacious belief, which can often be flexible, if not fickle. Indeed, while the clergy is obviously powerful in Abrahamic traditions, there is a personal relationship between God and his people, and his people. In an important recent work, Armando Salvatori radically revises Habermas's notion of the public sphere from a long Axial Age historical perspective. He shows how in the Abrahamic traditions, particularly in Christianity and Islam, the transcendent telos not only provided an engine for change through the Axial Renaissance of the 13th century and the modern Enlightenment, but also the sacred authority to build the social bond and connective justice between communities, in the community.
在这个亚伯拉罕系的宗教传统当中呢，对于一个超越的神，唯一的神，神是大写的神，他的这个信仰呢是最基要的。他是在这个他们的经文当中，包括圣经、古兰经和犹太教的这个托拉里面都有，这个亚伯拉罕在这个神为了测试他的这个真信程度，就要求他把自己的这个头生子献给这个神，最后是一头羊换下来了，因为他确实相信亚伯拉罕是虔信他的。这个是一个非常戏剧化的表达，所以我要在这里强调呢，对于这些在这些这个亚伯拉罕系传统当中对于神的这个相信和承诺，对于非亚伯拉罕的传统是不太一样的。而在这些后者当中呢，所谓的相信仅仅是相信神和他的这些工业的灵验程度，那这样的话呢，我们对于亚伯拉罕系的传统的相信可必须要用大写的那个 belief 以区分于对于这个一些小神或者说具体的做事情的神的这个信仰他的灵验。那这种信仰他的灵验呢，往往是非常可变通的，甚至是摇摆不定的。的确在这个亚伯拉罕系的传统当中的这个教会教士阶层是非常的有这个明显是非常强有力的。在那个与此同时呢，神和他的人民当中子民当中呢，子民又有一个非常个人的一个联系一个关系。在一个很重要的最近的著作当中呢，阿德曼多Salvatore 一个意大利裔的这个学者，他非常从头彻底的重新的修改了哈贝马斯的所谓一个公共领域的理论。他用的就是这么一个比较长期的长视角的这个轴心文明的这个历史视角。他展示了在亚伯拉罕传统当中，特别是在这个基督教和伊斯兰教当中呢，这个超验的目的是如何并不仅仅提供了一种变革的这个引擎。这样的话有十三世纪的这个轴心的文明的复兴一直到现在的启蒙，但是呢它同时还提供了一种神圣的一种威权，这样呢它能够来构建这个社会的这个纽带和一种所谓的社群当中的连结性的一种公正。
Salvatore's argument is too complex to enter into a detailed treatment here.But one of his most important claims is that in the Abrahamic traditions of Euro-Mediterranean civilization area, including the Middle East, an archaic public sphere is warranted, is guaranteed by the relationship of self to other or ego to alter via God, via the Abrahamic God. He goes on to demonstrate the role of Christian monastic movements and Sufi mystic brotherhoods in shaping the synthesis of the Axial Renaissance by mediating telos and practical reasoning, or linking transcendent goals with public reasoning in everyday society. Thus, by integrating the authority of God with communicative reason, the new messiahs created new traditions of intersubjective understandings in the public sphere. Shall we leave this on?
Sure. 萨尔瓦多的这个他的这个论点呢，在这里我不可以，就是因为它太复杂，我不可以做一个非常详细的处理。但是他很重要的一个主张就是，亚伯拉罕其传统在这个所谓的欧洲地中海文明的他这个传统呢，包括中东的这个大的区域当中呢，一种非常陈旧的一种古旧的一个公共领层面呢，是由一个个人的通过神的这么一个个人，就是大写的神上帝这个个人的关系，一种我和他的关系来承诺的，来就是保证的。他继续来展现了这个基督教经验传统和苏菲的这个神秘主义这些兄弟会，他们在塑造这个轴心文明的复兴时间的这个他的这些整个的整合的过程当中呢，他通过这个协调telos 就是目的，还有就是 phronesis 就是所谓的这个实际理性啊，他们之间的关系，或者是将超验的这个目标同这个每天日常生活当中社会当中这些公众的这个伦理讲道理把它连接起来，这样的话呢，通过将神大写的神的这个唯一神的这么一个权威的这个，并把它同交往理性给整合起来的话呢，这些新的弥赛亚就是先知，救世主，他们就创造了新的这个主体之间的这个理解的，在公共领域的主体间理解的一些新的传统。
However, Salvatore rarely clarifies or identifies the other or altar. Does it represent differentiated segments within the community of the faithful or those outside it? He indicates that in the later Abrahamic traditions, proselytizing is a central feature that goes beyond the community paradigm of the first axial breakthrough. It was no longer enough to accomplish canonically prescribed duties and rituals to attain salvation.Became imperative to win over other faiths to the faith, win over others to the faith and to a virtuous life conduct. In other words, they had to be converted to a type of social bond based on a fellowship of faith and on the idea of a God-willed connective justice. Abrahamic religions are by no means uniquely violent in the history of religions.However, the injunction to proselytize and communal organization of believers combined in certain historical circumstances to create violently competitive forms resembling those of modern society. Let me just go through this next pair. Abrahamic societies might be seen as proto-national societies. Thus, while they are utterly different from national societies in that they had neither territorial limits nor technologies of modern social integration,The identity of the believer qua believer was constitutive of the community. Indeed, we might think of them as vertically integrated communities where state, church, or clergy and believer are one under God. Privilege and hierarchy within this community is doctrinally a secondary matter. In the Chinese and Indian traditions, such a type of vertical integration was rarely achieved.Even when faith-based communities were generated within them. The Sikh faith in 18th century under Maharaja Ranjit Singh may have come closest to such a community when they briefly held state power, but it was not committed to active proselytization. Can you forget the first paragraph and just do the second?
Okay, sure. Okay. No problem.
Yeah.
我们就把刚才一段省略，他觉得第二段更重要，给大家解释一下。就是亚伯拉罕系的这些社会呢，就是相信这些宗教的这些社会呢，国家呢，他们可以被看成是原民族这个原始的原民族的这个社会，因为这样的话呢，虽然他们同这个就是民族社会是完全的不一样的。在这方面是不一样，他们没有这个领土的边界，也没有现代社会整合的一些技术，而且呢，这个是不同的。但是他们这个信仰，就是信者， 信众他的这个身份认同，他们之间的这个关，这个身份认同和这个信者之间的身份认同，他们是建构了对这个社群是起到一种建构性作用的。的确呢，在我们可以把他们看作是这些社会看成是一种垂直整合的一些社群，在这些社群当中呢，国家政权、教会这个教士以及信众，他们是在这个神唯一神下面是一体的。在这个社群当中的这个特权也好，还有这个等级也好，都是从教义上讲是次一位的事情。在中国和印度的传统当中呢，这种垂直的整合是很少得到实现的，甚至就是像他们内部产生了一些这种以信仰为宗教信仰为基础的一些社群呢，他们也没有就是达到这些情况。18世纪印度的这个锡克教，在这个马哈拉加兰吉辛格的领导下呢，他们可能接近于这样一个社群。当他们在那个短时期内拿到了国家的这个权柄，但是他没有就是完全的致力于一种积极的就是说服别人去改宗。而在阿布拉罕系的宗教当中呢，所有的就是教义有一条就是命令大家去不遗余力的要求不信这些宗教的人去改宗的，所以这是一个最重要的区别。
I argue that transcendence, the transcendence of heaven, was scarcely absent in Chinese society. It played a hugely important role in Chinese history. But the political configuration in Imperial China sought to block access to this transcendent power. In contrast to the vertically integrated and relatively exclusivist Abrahamic societies, from the perspective of transcendence, Chinese imperial society was vertically divided. Although the empire was constituted by the axiom of all under heaven or Tianxia, only the emperor was permitted access to transcendent power. A panoply of gods, spirits, and ancestors could be worshipped by the rest of the population to satisfy their desires for human flourishing. The general ban on the worship of heaven, however, is worth reconsidering. Why was the ban enforced so fiercely unless it represented a significant symbolic source of cosmic authority? Indeed, the long history of popular uprisings challenging the mandate of heaven is evidence of the immense power of this transcendent authority.
我要想论说，就是这个超验，天的超验，在中国社会当中呢，是不曾有多少这个就是不在场的，一般都是在的。他在中国历史上起到了一个非常重要的、极端重要的一个角色，做到了一个角色。但是在这个中华帝国时代中国的这个政治构造当中呢，他其实是企图去阻碍或者说阻断这个通往这个超验力量的这么一个通路的。同这个亚伯拉罕非常具有排他性的这个亚伯拉罕宗教社会的这个垂直的这个整合情况相比呢，在从超验的这个角度来看呢，中国的帝制社会也是垂直的分开来的，他们是垂直整合，我们是垂直的分开。尽管这个帝国是构建在一个所谓天下的这么一个教条的这个声明之下的，但只有皇帝本人才能够被允许有这个通往神圣的超验的力量的这么一个通路，而其他的一大群的小神仙啊，还有神灵啊，还有他们这个逝去的先祖，可以被其余的这个人口来祭祀，来满足他们对人之繁荣的一种欲望。而对于这个天的祭祀的崇拜的这么一种非常广泛的这个禁止呢，是值得我们重新考虑的。为什么这个禁令是如此坚决的被执行呢？除非它是不是代表了一种非常非常具有显著的具有这个宇宙论上面的这个威权威的这么一种象征的力量的源泉呢？的确，在这个挑战就是天的这个授权的这么一种天道的这个大规模的群众起义当中呢，这个整个就是说替天行道呢，往往就是说可以表现作为这种天它的这个超验的权威的它内在的巨大的力量的一种明证。
However, when we consider the institutionalized religions or traditions in Imperial China, it is clear that the separateness of Confucianism and Taoism was never fully secured because of state control. But they should not be allowed to obscure the importance of the Confucian claim on transcendent authority. Confucius and Mencius sought to locate heaven beyond the exclusive access and control of the ruler and create a morality that also subjected the ruler and individual, although via social hierarchies, to it. The autonomy and critique of the ruler based on heaven's authority was a recurrent claim in the Confucian tradition. The personal quest for sagehood of the Junzi and the cultivation of the heavenly endowed nature, the Tianming Jixing, were the supreme goals of the committed Confucian, particularly in late imperial times, and best exemplified in the New Confucian school of Wang Yangming or Xinxue. One of the most radical thinkers of the school, Li Zhi, argued that the individual was endowed by heaven with the child's mind, the Tongxin, that was intrinsically capable of discerning good from evil and thus had no need to conform to external constraints in moral cultivation.
然而当我们考虑一下就是这个体制化的宗教或者传统在这个我们这个中这个 帝国时代中国的时候呢很显然就是说这个儒家和这个道家的这个区分从来都没有在这个没有被完全的这个实现过，因为是有国家的这个管制在，但这并不应该就被用来这个阻碍我们看到就说儒家对于这个超验的这个权威的主张的这个重要性。孔子和孟子呢都寻求把天放在这个统治者的这个他的专有的这个通路和控制之外的，他想创造一种包括把这个统治者和这个个人都在内的这些还有所谓的社会层级等等都要像把它让它屈从于这么一个这样的道德体系。这个传统这个儒家传统当中呢有这样一个反复提出的这么一个主张，就是说这个所谓的这个统治者的他的自主权和他的这个对他的批评都是基于天的权威的。君子这个就是个人其实追寻于一种就是圣哲的这个境界，和这个天命之心都是孔家的这个儒家的非常至高无上的这个目标，特别是在这个晚期的帝国时代，尤其是在明朝的王阳明的这个心学这个学派。而且这个学派最著名的一个激进思想家写了焚书的李治，他说这个个人呢有因为天赐给了个人一个童心，这个原文我没有查，所以我就姑且意义了。他呢本从内在就具有一种能力来察觉来分辨善恶，所以他不需要去屈从于外在的一种就是道德的这个修养的一种束缚。
The tradition of Confucian eremitism or hermeticism, where the true Confucian sage rejected political power or suffered from having opposed incorrect or immoral policy, certainly retained its rhetorical power through the imperial period, especially when shrines to notable Confucians were created in local society. Indeed, many adherents of Wang Yangming or the Taiyo school subsequently played an important part in the popular syncretic movements of Sanjia Feiyi, which arguably became a dominant form of religiosity in Republican China. While not at all intrinsically oppositional or political, the syncretic movement was deeply redemptive and appealed to a notion of transcendence that combined the Buddhist and the Neo-Confucian doctrine of the mind. Nonetheless, the major religious traditions were closely controlled by the imperial state during the late imperial period. Institutional Buddhism and Taoism were controlled largely by state licensing and surveillance. The imperial state's relationship with Confucianism was more complex, and I explore it elsewhere by considering both cosmological and institutional arguments. Cosmologically, the close relationship was forged by the significance of a non-axial tradition of sacred authority in Shang and Zhou China.
传统的这个儒家的这个解释学，就是说，其中儒家的这个君子，他是拒绝或者说拒斥政治的这个力量，或者说他从往往是在那个会遭受到一种他会遭受因为反对这个不正确的这个道德的这种或者不道义的这种政策呢，他会为之受苦，但他们显然呢就在这个后帝制后期，可能是。应该是从明朝以后了，他获得了一种修辞或者说修辞上的这种言语上的力量，特别是像这个 在这个地方社会当中呢，为很多的著名的这个儒家学者都给他们配了庙。这的确在很多的这个王阳明和泰州学派的这个新儒家的这个信徒当中呢，他们在这个民国非常重要的民国的时候，一种非常重要的主导的信仰模态啊，三教合一当中，他们起到了一个非常重要的作用。虽然呢，他们本质上并不是一种就是与建制对抗的这么一个运动，但是三教合一的运动，它是具有非常深刻的救世的性质，它企图去就是起灵于一种就是叫做超验的一种观念，它包含了就是整个的包括儒家和新儒家的一些思想，或者说叫理学的思想，我刚刚不好意思搞错了，这个 Neo-Confucianism 应该翻译成理学和这个佛教的思想所谓的这个心学都给联系在一起了。当然呢，与此同时呢，这个很主要的这些宗教传统呢，他们往往是被帝国政府帝国朝廷非常紧密的控制着的，在这个明朝以后宋明以后这个建体系化的这个宗教和佛教和道教，他们大部分是由政府给他们颁发这种就是令状和政府的严密监控来得到控制。但是帝国朝廷同这个儒家这个思想之间的关系呢，可能比更加的这个复杂，我会在其他地方加以论述，我要考虑到它的宇宙论和这个整个体制的一些论点。从宇宙论的角度来看呢，这个整个紧密的关系是通过一种就是非这个轴心传统的一种神圣的权威，在商和周时代的中国确立的这种权威，它的这个它的显要性塑造了这种紧密的关系。
Ancestral tradition. Anthony Yu has clarified a body of scholarship that suggested there were two forms of religious authority in China: heaven and the ancestor. The emperor made both kinds of claim for his absolute sovereignty. One was in the cosmic realm of relations between heaven and earth, and the other in the human relations. The former derived from a transcendent heaven, latter from a non-transcendent, but no less powerful cult of the imperial ancestor who also had sacred potency. For instance, for punitive expeditions during the Shang, the emperor had to receive the mandate from the ancestor, Ti. It was this pre-axial tradition of ancestor worship, or what Anthony Yu calls ancestor making, whereby rituals transform a kinsman into a symbol of divine power, that authorized the emperor to trump or to preempt the transcendent power of heaven.
Anthony Yu, does he have a Chinese name?
What is Tony Yu?
余国凡教授他呢就澄清了一大块的这个学术的这个讨论。他提出就是说有两种中国古代有两种形式的宗教权威，一种是天的权威，一种是祖宗的权威。皇帝呢他就是有宣称对两种权威他都是有这个绝对的这个主权的，一种是在这个宇宙就是天和地之间的这个宇宙论的关系当中领域当中，另一个是在这个人际的关系的领域当中。前者它是这个渊源于一个超验的天，后者是来自一个并不是超验但并不而且没丝毫没有就是一点就是示弱的这种一种就是宗教的一种祭祀。他们一般是祭祀这个帝国的这个祖先，他也有非常强大的神圣力量。例如在这个商代的这些讨伐当中呢，这个天子他要这个从古代的这个祖先帝这里获得一种授权，他才能去。这种在轴心文明时代之前的传统，就是中祖先崇拜的传统，或者是余教授他所说的这种创造祖先的这种传统呢，他是通过一种宗教的典仪把一个族人转化成了一种神圣力量的一个象征，他就授权皇帝他来这个要么就是完全抛弃，或者就是他可以完全抛弃这个天的超验力量，他也可以就是去通过做一些事情来阻止天的力量起效果。
I'm going to start skipping now, so you maybe follow. From one perspective, the political history of China may be seen as a contest between imperial authority and elites seeking to claim authority of heaven or other forms of transcendence. From the Confucian perspective, the elite had to fight both the incorporation by imperial power as well as the challenge posed by the Buddhists and to a lesser extent the Taoists. Indeed, it is possible that by fighting the strong notion of transcendence of the Buddhists in the idea of nirvana, they were forced into an alliance with the state. The importance of the non-axial practice of ancestor worship among Confucians was a principal cosmological doctrine that brought them within the embrace of the imperial state, particularly since the Buddhists rejected the very concept. Indeed, according to Kaiming Zhou, who is sitting right here, the orthodox Confucian reaction against the heart-mind school of Neo-Confucianism emphasized not simply ritualism, but ancestral ritualism and the lineage system to counter the moral autonomy of the Taijo Neo-Confucianists and syncretists. Indeed, some among the orthodox Zhengzhou Neo-Confucianists attacked their rivals' views of Di as a supreme deity and insisted on regarding the Di rite as the right to the king's first ancestor. Thus, they associated this imperial rite with the ideology of the descent line of the emperor rather than worship of heaven.
从一个视角来看呢，中国的这个政治史可能可以看成是一种帝国威权和这个和精英企图这个去宣称拥有就是天的这种权威的精英或者其他形式超验的这种威权的一种竞争。从这个儒家学派的这个视角来看呢，精英呢或者说士绅，他必须要在两线作战，一线是这个帝国这个权力的它的一种整合吸纳，另外一种是这个佛教徒他的一些挑战，而且呢，但是呢，还有就是道教徒的可能程度上更轻一些的一种挑战。的确呢，就是说，在通过同比较强的一种佛教徒他比较强的一种超验的观点做斗争呢，他们基本上被迫的同国家的帝国朝廷进入了一种结盟的状态，非轴心这个文明的这种祖先崇拜的做法，在孔这个儒家来看呢，它是一个非常主要的宇宙论的一个教条，使他们能够就是纳入了这个帝国这个朝廷的一个体系当中，尤其是因为佛教呢，它是非常拒斥这个观点的。根据这个周凯文教授，这个正宗的这个或者说正统的儒家的反应，对于这个理学的他们强调的这个所谓的这个心性的这个学派呢，它不仅是一种典仪，而且它强调的是一种对于就是祖先祭祀的疑点和这个就是世系的体系来用它来抵抗这个泰州的这个新这个理学学派和三教合一学派他们一种所谓提出的道德自治的这么一种观点。那么的确在这个正统的这个正柱这个理学的这个程朱理学的这个它的系统当中呢，他们打击了对手的对于帝作为一个超这个至高无上的神体的这么一种观点，而且他们坚决认为呢，把帝这个的典仪，只能是看作是皇帝的这个第一个祖先的一种祭祀的典仪。他们这样通过因此呢，把这个帝国的这个典仪呢，同整个皇家世系的一条线的意识形态给联系起来了，而不是把它跟对于天的崇拜联系在了一起。
Early Chinese religiosity did not seem to associate death with the transcendent principle of heaven. Rather, ancestor worship was the non-axial mode of responding to the problem of death. Ancestor making involved elaborate, regular, and continuing ritual performances and sacrifices. Ancestors did not disappear into a transcendent or entirely different world. They continued to have effects in the worlds of humans. Only those ancestors that were not cared for with proper sacrifice and rituals became restless spirits and ghosts, while those who were properly cared for conveyed good fortune to their filial descendants. Such an anthropomorphic conception of the deceased applied not only to ancestors, but also to heroes or virtuous men whose spirit protected the communities by occupying the title of a tutelary deity, such as the city god. I should finish this, yeah.
Exactly.
A second mode of co-optation of the Confucian literati was none other than the famed bureaucracy and the examination system. Indeed, the latter was much more important than the former, because while the bureaucracy absorbed a small number of officials, the examination system churned out hundreds of thousands of lower degree holders ineligible for office, or still larger numbers who aspired to join the degree-holding family, elite, but failed to qualify. These were nonetheless people who had been trained often from childhood in Confucian classics and orthodox ideology.
早期的这些中国的信仰形态呢，它并不看来是把死亡同这个超验的这个天的原则相联系起来的，取而代之是这样的，就是说这个祖先崇拜，它是这个非轴心文明的一种模态，它是反映了它应对这个死亡问题的模态。祖先的这个创造包括非常复杂精妙而且是经常化的一种持续的一种典仪的这个实行和奉献。这个祖先他并不会消失到一个超验或者是完全全然不同的世界，他们继续对这个人类的世界拥有效果，产生效果。只有那些没有被这个好好照料的祖先，通过这个恰当的这个祭祀照料的祖先，才会变成非常就是不安的鬼魂。如果那些被这个合适的照料的呢，就会庇佑他们的这个子孙。这种人格化的一种对于死者的构想呢，它并不仅仅是适用于祖先，而且适用于英雄或者是一些就是这个至高大德，他们的精神呢，他们的灵会去保佑这些社群，他们会给他一个非常具有就是仅仅具有一个挂名的一个神的位置，比方说城隍庙等等，城隍庙的这个城隍。另外一种第二种的这个儒家的这个士绅的这个一种笼络呢，就是所谓的就是举世闻名的文官这个体系和他的科举系统。其实后者比前者要更加重要，因为这个前者仅仅吸收一小部分的官员，整个科举系统它会产生数以千万计的这个就是最低级的这个秀才的这个或者说生源的这个获得者，他们这些这个科名的获得者，他们这些人他并不能够通过自己的这个功名来获取这个职这个一官半职，他甚至很多大量的人他还仅仅是企图来加入就是获得功名，考取功名，但是完全都没有成功过。但还是有人从小一开始就会被训练在这个儒家的经典当中和意识形态的这个正统意识形态当中，就是浸淫于其中的训练的。
Okay, I'm cutting from here.
Sure.
Then you pick up in the middle.
Okay, sure.
Next week. Thus, the imperial state in Qing China had built an elaborate and capacious apparatus of ideological orthodoxy that included cosmological and institutional modes of securing elite loyalties, made possible in large part by the existence of a relatively open meritocratic system which fostered aspirations of upward and stateward mobility among the elites. The genius of this imperial system may be seen in comparison to the European states, which were radically transformed by the commercial and cosmological, that is to say Protestant, revolutions. The Chinese state was able to forestall the destabilization caused by the pervasive commercialization which burgeoned from the Tang-Sung transition. In Europe, this destabilization ultimately led to the rise of the commercial bourgeoisies that overthrew the imperial orders. But in China, the rural and urban commercial elites were often co-opted into the imperial system. But if the Qing state was able to co-opt the elites, what about the vast realms of popular society? Actually, I shouldn't have said that last night. I'll come back to that later.
Okay.
Okay.
No problem. 这样的话呢，这个这样的话，这个清朝的时候的这个帝国朝廷呢，它就建立起了一个非常复杂精良，而且就是能够有很大的包容力的一种正统意识形态的一个机器。它包括了包括了宇宙论和体制的这些保证精英的他们这个忠诚的这些模态，而这些呢大部分是由于一个非常 非常公开的相对公开的以你的这个能力和你的这个以你的能力为衡量的这么一个系统，它鼓励向上的这个社会精英当中的向上的社会移动性。这个帝国系统的天才所构想的天才所在呢，就是把他们跟欧洲相比，就欧洲的这个国家相比，就是他们剧烈的欧洲的国家就被这个整个的商业的和宇宙论上的这个革命，宇宙论的革命指的是这个新教的这个新教的对宗教的革命，天主教就变成了一个它中间又发生了分裂。那这样的话呢，中国它反而就没有出现这样的情况。中国的朝廷能够阻止这个从唐宋之交开始的这个非常广泛的这种商业化所造成的一种就是扰乱和不安，一种不稳定。在欧洲这种不稳定最终导致了这个商业资产阶级的兴起，他们就推翻了帝国的这个整个的这个阶层。但是在中国呢，这个城乡的这些商业的精英，他们还是会被这个帝国朝廷给笼络进这个自己的系统来的。
But if the Qing state was able to co-opt the elites, what about the vast realm of popular society? Then I cut again most of the rest. Indeed, popular religiosity turned out to be a vibrant field of communication and negotiation, accommodation and adaptation, camouflage and resistance between state and elite orthodoxy and popular culture. In an earlier study of the Kwandi cult, I tried to show how the imperial state sought to appropriate the popular hero from the Three Kingdoms as an orthodox figure, elevated to the highest of gods and carrying the classics in one hand, even as popular lore told martial stories of his bandit-like exploits and vows of sworn brotherhood and loyalty. The figure and myth of Kwandi was superscribed by each group and community, drawing on older and contemporary interpretations, but each marked by a distinctive interpretation to serve its charter. As such, the myth of Kwandi not only preserved the diversity within a capacious culture, but also served as a medium of communication and negotiation among different groups. The capaciousness of popular religiosity was considerably enabled by the fact that much of it represented community religion. As such, local elites, particularly the non-literati elites, but even literati, participated actively in the multiple levels. Thus, on the one hand, they took part in state-mandated territorial cults, but also the leadership of local ceremonies and communal festivals. In part of the South and Southeast China, the notion of locality was stretched out over considerable territories by the acts of ritual and ceremonial commemoration, interlinking temple communities. Such activities were important expressions of community leadership, networking, and sources of authority for the local elite. The cultural nexus also accommodated alternative, if not always subversive forms, such as the growing number of syncretic and redemptive societies at the end of the Qing period.
但如果这个清廷可以笼络这些精英，那整个这个底层社会的这个大部分人又是怎么样的呢？的确，大众的这种信仰模态被证明是一种非常动态的一个沟通的交流的一个场域，它充满了这个沟通。磋商、谈判，还有就是包容和调整，还有伪装，甚至是抵抗，在这个这些事情发生在这个朝廷和精英，还有正统的这些自居的这些精英以及大众文化之间，在早期的我做的一个对于官帝的崇拜的一个研究当中呢，我想我企图来表现整个帝国朝廷企图来挪用这个三国时代的这个非常受欢迎的这个英雄人物作为一个正统人物，给他抬升到一个最高的一个神奇的这么一个级别，然后呢一手拿都是经典，这个经典，即使他知识当中呢我们老百姓讲的这些故事都是他像这个江湖好汉一样的这些打家劫舍，以及他当时的这些桃园结义的这种忠实的故事。关帝这一人物和神话呢，被历代的很多的每一个就是群体和社群呢，进行了层层的刻画。这个 superscribe 我们把它翻译成刻画。 给就是他们这些刻画呢都利用了各种各样的可能时间更早的可能是同时代的一些对于这个观地的阐述，但是他们总是被用来，每一个阐述都是被用来用来解释或者说为自己的一个宪章，一个自己的这么一个社团的这个宗旨而服务的。作为这样的一个观地呢，神话呢，它不仅仅保存了一个非常具有包容力的一个文化的多元性，而且呢也是作为了不同的一些群体之间的沟通和这个协商的一个中介媒体。那这个大众信仰模态的这种包容性呢，它是被这个下面一个事实所产生的。那它就是社群的一种宗教，因为就是整个的大众的这个宗教它是一种社群的宗教。作为这样的这种信仰呢，这个地方的一些士绅乡绅，比方说这些并不属于这个士绅阶层的这些精英，他们可以经常的在这个各种各样的层面上积极的参与到这些活动当中去。所以在一方面呢，他们参加了这个，他们就是参与到这个由国家朝廷所支持的这个土地神的这个信仰当中，同时呢，他们也会就是担当起这些小地方的这些节庆和这个庆典的一些领导角色，包括这个就是大家所相信的这种就是这个通灵啊等等。在很多就是南方和东南，中国的南方和这个东南部，这个地域的观念呢是非常非常的广泛的啊，而且呢，他们是通过一种典仪性的、庆典性的一种纪念，把这个整个的这个就是一些同样的祭祀、同样神性的寺庙，他们进行一种连结。这些活动呢，他们是非常重要的，就是表达社群领导以及这个网络连接和党为这个本土的这个小的地区的精英的他们获得权益的这个源泉呢，所给他们一种非常重要的表达通路。这种文化的纽带也包容了一种就是非常另类，但很可能并不是通常是具有颠覆性的一些形式，比方像以前我们刚刚提到的这个三教合一的正数巨大的不断增长的三教合一和旧世协会这些的事情，这些团体在清朝末期出现的尤其频繁。
But the imperial state remains suspicious of popular cults and spirit mediums for harboring heterodox views, and periodically, both state and elites conducted campaigns to sweep out popular religions that were not state-oriented or part of the state cult. Thus, many of the ideas and practices related to alternative conceptions and popular access to heaven were driven deeper into popular culture, where they mingle and often camouflage themselves in the thicket of popular religiosity. Here it would be difficult to trace what the minister of the state of Chu had proscribed, to cut the communications between heaven and earth, so as to prevent each household indiscriminately performing for itself the religious observances. Buddhist and Buddhist sectarian groups would often utilize the tropes of popular culture to accommodate orthodoxy and negotiate the salvationist aspects of religion, which were often viewed as heterodox. In particular, renunciation was regarded as anti-filial. The popular story of Mulian instructs the children who have taken the vow of celibacy nevertheless perform the greatest and most valorous deeds of filial piety, rescuing their immoral parents from evil forces, represents this kind of accommodation. The sectarian Sutra Reaving Society's ideal of salvation was particularly attractive to women who found in them an alternative form of sociability outside the home. The story of Miao Shan speaks particularly to a kind of sectarian feminist filiality. In this story, a young woman who refused to marry the man of her father's choice is thrown out of the family and joins a nunnery. However, when her family subsequently suffers deep trouble, she returns with the powers of the Bodhisattva to rescue them.
但是呢，帝国朝廷它还是对这些群众性的这种小宗教信仰有着非常深和这个灵媒有着非常深深的就是怀疑。因为呢，他们经常会包藏一些非常异端的见解，而且呢，时不时的这个朝廷和士绅都会通过各种各样的战役来清理这些，就是清除这些其实他们觉得不是朝向忠顺朝廷，或者说不是朝廷的这么一个大的这么一个 一个大的崇拜下的一些大众的这些宗教。所以呢，很多的这些同另类的观点和以及大众对于这个上天的这个威权的一些通路的这些观点和这个做法呢，都被深深的就是推入了这个大众的文化的更深处。他们在那里呢，经常是被包藏在这个大众信仰模态的这个深处，有着非常非常隐藏的这个或者说伪装的一些色彩。那我们如何来去追溯呢？就是说这个楚王的这个臣子对他所说的，就是要始复旧常，无相禁毒，是为绝地天通呢？啊，像这个佛教和佛教各教派这个群体当中，他们常常会利用这个大众文化呢，来包容一些正统思想，并且呢，在他们这些宗教当中的这个旧式的思想，他们可能看起来呢会是被国家看成是异端的这些旧式的思想，在他这里进行一种就是协商和这种一种协商。那特别是在这个就是朱家应该讲被看作是不孝了。这个木莲的这个故事，就是木莲告诉小孩子呢，就是说他这个在表示就是持有这个斋戒和这个清净的这个宣誓之后呢，他其实是最最深刻的一种就是孝的一种最勇敢和最伟大的一个做法啊，把他们的非常就是不道德的这个父母亲从邪恶力量那里拯救过来，他就是代表了这么一种所谓的包容。而这个世俗的呢，就是阅读经的这些社团的，他们可能就这个特别的会吸引到一些女性，因为这些女性在他们当中呢，发现了一种另类的一种社交的形态啊，在他们家庭之外的社交形态。妙善的这个故事就是特别是这样一个信仰宗教的这么一个女性的一种孝的体验。就是在这个故事当中，一个年轻女子呢，她拒绝就是和她这个父亲所命令就是成婚的这么一个就是她的一个未来的丈夫，她就因此被就是家庭给弃绝，她就加入了一个尼姑庵。然而她的家庭遭遇到非常深刻的不幸的时候，她又回来运用观音菩萨的这个神力，给她的神力呢去来拯救他们。
Beyond the sectarian society were also syncretic societies, or the redemptive societies that I've talked about.As faith-based salvation was largely driven into popular society, some remarkable syntheses came to be developed from the variety of transcendent ideals that became available by Ming-Qing times, namely Taoist and Buddhist ideals as well as Confucian morality. While some of these societies were closely associated with the sectarian tradition, including the worship of Buddhist and folk deities like the Eternal Mother, they also represented the late imperial syncretic tradition of Sanjiao Hei.Combining the three religions into a universal faith. Late imperial syncretism, which urged the extinguishing of worldly desire in engagement in moral action, gained popularity among the Confucian gentry and the Buddhist and Taoist laity in the